So this is the title of my podcast, Justice Unraveled. My name is Luis Armando Arias. I'm an assistant professor of practice in the Department of Criminal Justice and Security Studies. I graduated from UTEP in 1977 with a degree in political science. I graduated from law school in 1981. I'm retired from the FBI as an intelligence analyst. Prior to that, I worked with the probation department for about 15 years. The way I use my moral dilemmas is it extracts from the student their logic, how they think, having been socialized through family, friends, school, and so what's their value system to help them decipher this moral dilemma? Generally speaking, what moral dilemmas do is that we are confronted every day on having to choose right from wrong.
There's more reasons to not use torture, but I do think it was a controversial scenario.
I think it depends on the government structure too.
I just don't think it's right. We have a right way of doing things. We have what's called the due process of law.
We would be breaking the law at the expense of somebody's life.
I was asking myself, should law always be followed, even when it leads to seemingly immoral results?
That would be someone's family, maybe someone's brother, someone's sister, mother, getting put to death.
Anybody would do anything to survive.
This is an excerpt from Don Quixote de la Mancha. A large river separated two districts. On this river, there was a bridge, and at one end of it, a gallows, and a sort of tribunal, where four judges commonly sat to administer the law, which the lord of the river, the bridge, and the lordship had enacted. If anyone crosses this bridge, he shall declare on oath where he is going to and with what object. And if he swears truly, he shall be allowed to pass. But if falsely, he shall be put to death by hanging on the gallows erected there, without any remission. Many persons crossed, but in their declarations, it was easy to see at once they were telling the truth. And the judges let them pass free. It happened, however, that one man, when they came to his declaration, swore and said that by oath he was going to die upon that gallows. The judges held a consultation over the oath, and they said, "If we let this man pass free, he has sworn falsely, and by the law he ought to die. But if we hang him, as he swore he was going to die on that gallows, and therefore swore the truth, by the same law he ought to go free. It is asked by your worship, Señor Governor, what are the judges to do with this man?" So I want to start this discussion with asking you just general questions.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the themes that you picked up from your reading, your understanding of that moral dilemma?
One of the first things I noticed was that allowing people to cross over the bridge was based on truth. So I'm assuming that's in relation to security or making sure good people who tell the truth are coming or crossing the bridge. I also noticed the fact that the issue that's being presented, whether or not this person should pass or not based on his declaration, it introduces a lot of contradiction for the law and for like both moral standpoints.
So in addition to this idea of the truth and maybe the nature of the law, is there another theme that you can think of in this moral dilemma? Any other theme that you can think of?
Would it be the role of the tribunal and their power as to whether or not they can like decide this kind of issue?
So when one goes to court, for example, in the case here, tribunal, the person who goes before them is seeking what?
They're seeking some kind of remission, like something to be solved.
And could we say that they're also seeking justice?
Yes.
In your estimation, are there any legal and moral issues in the dilemma?
Yes, I do.
That said, what are those moral issues?
Well, starting with moral, the individual that has presented themselves to the tribunal is declaring that they will die once they cross the bridge, and they would die at the hands of the gallows. So the reason why this is a moral issue is because they're leaving the truth to be decided to the tribunal. This individual is not necessarily declaring a truth that's like present in that moment. He's stating that if he crosses, then he will die at the hands of the tribunal. So that means that the tribunal will be responsible for either killing an individual for telling the truth, which is a contradiction of their initial law, and also just wrongful, it's just wrongful killing. The individual essentially didn't do anything wrong from that standpoint. And it also sets a scary precedent for people who decide that if they could just simply die if they tell that kind of statement to the tribunal. And legal, it's difficult because now the judges are facing a decision on whether or not they should uphold the law and abide it by killing the man, in the sense that he might be lying if they let him go, but then he would be telling the truth if they let him die, which is, again, the moral contradiction between a wrongful death.
Just so that we are clear, there's this law enacted by this landowner who owns the land, owns the bridge, and so on. And so he creates this law that says as long as the villagers tell the truth, they can cross the bridge. If you want to go across the bridge, you have to do that, tell the truth. If you lie, then what's the consequence?
In this case, they would have to be put to death.
That said, and it's probably redundant here, but I'll say it this way. So what is the paradox here in your belief?
From the judge's standpoint, this person is coming and declaring that they will die at the gallows. So if they end up letting this person cross the bridge and let them go, then that would be a violation of the law because the statement is considered a lie. But if they end up killing the individual for the statement, then they would be violating the law in the same way just because they ended up abiding by his truth. So either way, the judges are violating the law. It just different outcomes, and one is seems to have more of a greater impact, like more irreversible consequences.
And staying with the legal part of it, if you were a judge, would you interpret that law literally, or would you interpret that law by way of its intent?
For applying it literally, I feel like it's important to have a balance in both. But if you were to apply it strictly literal, then I think the way that the law is worded, the way that it's stated specifically, is what matters. So in this case, it has like the requirement of making a statement of who you are or where you're going, I believe, and what you have on you. And if you lie, then you're put to death. And if you tell the truth, you're free. So it's pretty straightforward, but it doesn't leave room for special cases like this one. And if you lead with intent, then you might you consider the reason why the law is there and what is it, what the intended consequence is supposed to be for this law. It really does depend on how the people interpret the intent of the law.
So it's about punishing those who create falsehoods, who lie. And so that's the intent of the law. The literal interpretation, as you mentioned, is by the text. You read it and you have to uphold it and support it literally. Which one are you more inclined? If you were the judge, which one would you follow? Follow the letter of intent or strict interpretation of the law?
I think the safer bet in this case would be the letter of intent. In my opinion, like I said, the literal meaning is really in the language, and the situation does not fit the language that this describes. So then it requires the judges to kind of come up with their own reasoning and their own logic on how to apply this kind of law and ensure that they're still pursuing the intent that the law is there for, without unless they want to get rid of it or change it. But without having to do that, I think it's better to go with the letter of intent.
There's a consequence to lying, and that is the person is hanged in the gallows. So it seems like that's the punishment. And so I'm going to infer from that this is a form of criminal law. I wonder if you might know and share with us what the elements of crime are. In other words, for a good criminal law to be written, and let's just again say that this is an example of a criminal law in that scenario.
Would it have to do with like describing the act and the different requirements?
To some extent. And so here are some of the elements of what makes a good criminal law. We'll talk about them, but I will be specific to maybe hone in on one. Number one, legality. Number two is specificity. Number three, regularity. Number four, uniformity. And number five, punishment. And so I'll explain to our audience a little bit about this criminal law concept here. Legality means someone with power, usually government, has the authority to write a law. for example. So before we can consider if that's a good criminal law, we need to find that there is an institution, a body of government, that has the power to write laws. Specificity in criminal law means that the crime has to be very, very specific and detailed. Regularity has to do that the laws having to be applying to everyone. In this case, people are wanting to cross the bridge, and so again, no one is singled out. Uniformity has to do with the enforcement, that law be enforced evenly across the board. And then, of course, punishment. With those short descriptions of those five words, if we were to apply this concept of what makes a good criminal law, which one or which ones of those would you be able to say, okay, this is their law, I'm going to apply this five rule or five characteristic rule to that law?
At first, I was inclined to say specificity because it excludes scenarios like this, and it seems to be a little bit, well, it's pretty vague. It has like a general idea, but I think it's also important to do uniformity, because if they were to go through the traditional response, which is likely to put the man to death if it is a lie, then, or if it is to let him go, there's arguments to say that either outcome is not a uniform result of what the law should be. So I would say between specificity and uniformity.
What about the idea of legality? So this is a man who owns this land, owns the river, owns the bridge, and he comes up with this law. Would legality be an issue here? Because it's a man creating this law and not a body of government.
I think it could be. I think it also depends on the area. Like if he owns this large portion of land and he just so happens to be the only person on it, then I think that would, he could argue that, or she could argue that they are eligible to be government to decide who's coming in and who makes the rules. But then that poses a question on whether or not, even in that circumstance, if they have the power to decide who dies.
Because again, the tribunal could act as what we call today here in America, the separation of powers, the idea of the judiciary. Okay. Arguably, maybe the Congress. But again, he enacted this law. And so it's one person. Does he equate to being Congress? Because Congress makes the laws. And in this case, it's a person who came up with this law.
No, it definitely can. If we're looking at it from, I think it depends on the government structure too. If it's a democracy, then absolutely. Then you could call it into question to see if they were even eligible to do that. But if it's a rule of like an authoritarian regime, then I think there's little questions on who's at power there.
Why do you think that laws have to be very detailed and very specific, unlike in civil law, where a person goes to civil court to be compensated for damages he or she sustained as a result of that person's behavior? Why in criminal law do you think this element of specificity is in criminal law but not in civil law?
I think because the requirement of punishment that is attached to criminal law, it often requires people to be stripped of certain rights. It requires irreversible consequences in some cases, like this one. People, you end up losing your life. It's not just your, it's not an incarceration. It's not a fine. It's not a fee. It's your life. So it requires very specific standards in order to ensure that the people that are being punished are being punished rightfully so.
And so criminal laws, do you agree they should be specific when articulated as a crime? This is a crime, they call whatever the crime is. And it's very specific as to what the elements are.
Yeah, I think it's really important because there's just more at stake. You need to take more careful consideration. It's kind of like the burden of proof for criminal law is like beyond a reasonable doubt. Even if you have one doubt, that's enough to completely throw off a guilty verdict. But in civil law, you just need like, it's more likely than not. So you just need like 51% certainty and the other person can be shown as liable.
Do you think as a judge in this scenario, if you were part of that tribunal, this idea of discretion, do you think that you would consider discretion in this case where this man has come to the bridge, he is telling them, I want to die by those gallows. That appears to be his truth. And they say, well, if we let him go, then he lied to us because he wants to die by the gallows. If we execute him in the gallows, we would have executed him because he told the truth. And so it's kind of a perplexing situation there.
I think so. I think it's actually important to use discretion because it considers outside factors that the law typically doesn't. I think it's especially important because laws often exist for a very long time, for years even, or different centuries, different societies. So I think it's important to use discretion to use it as like for the law to adjust with society and with the circumstance. Like, I think if this was a kid coming up, then that's probably more likely a situation that needs discretion. Or if it's an individual in need, then it needs discretion. Discretion, I think, is a great way to just kind of make a reasonable decision without having to jeopardize the legitimacy of the law.
So we'll get now to the call of the question. What would you do in this case if you were part of that tribunal? You know what the law is. This man wants to come across the bridge. He's told you what his objective is to want to cross the bridge and gives you this perplexing kind of situation.
I think I would just let the man go, cross the bridge and go free is my answer. But the reason why is because in either scenario, there's a violation of the law. And it just so happens that if we were to decide to kill the man and for telling the truth, then we would be breaking the law at the expense of somebody's life. But if we were to just let the man go freely without having to die at the gallows, then we would be breaking the law in the sense that we let somebody go based on a lie. But I think that that's a much smaller cost, and I feel like it's more likely justified than an unwanted death or an unjust death, if I should say.
You mentioned this word earlier, and it applies here from what you just described, the idea of precedence. So I'm that second person on this side of the bridge. He's gone before me, and I'm getting ready to cross the bridge. And they let him go because he wants to die by the gallows. I can overhear him say that. I want to die on those gallows. And the tribunal is complex. I mean, there is a situation that they don't know what to do with this man and what he said. And so you, being part of the tribunal, would say, let him pass. And so I'm coming up and I say, well, okay, isn't this setting the wrong precedence? Because he just told a falsehood. And according to the law, if you tell a falsehood, you die on the gallows. But they let him go. Would I be one of those villagers who can start to create havoc in the village by saying, you guys aren't playing fair, or here's the law, but you let him go, and why not me, and why aren't we under the same kind of protections? Do you think it would set a wrong precedence?
I think it definitely could. It could anger people who felt like they were scrutinized a little bit more, or that they had to go out of their way to declare their truth. But I think there could also be a much bigger uproar from people who, if they started seeing every single, I guess, different scenario or like unique scenario getting put to death. Because then there would be unjust death. That would be someone's family, maybe someone's brother, someone's sister, mother. They could just be getting put to death. And I think that the social consequences of that might be a little bit worse. And if anything, I feel like it might spark a little bit of a social change where people might be more tolerant to unique situations, maybe more empathetic, more understanding on exceptions of the law.
So if those are the two choices, you went with the one that maybe is less, I guess, restrictive, less consequential. If you were the other option, he is telling you he wants to die by the gallows. You go ahead and do that. You authorize him to die by the gallows. That's what he wanted. But then he's telling the truth. And so you just executed a person who told the truth because he wants to die by the gallows. And I'm that onlooker. I'm that person coming onto the bridge and see this man who just told them the truth, and he gets hanged. You think that that is far more serious?
I believe so.
Yes.
Yeah, because in the case where the individual really wants to die, I think being a tool to their decision to die is also not a great look, because then it could be an accessible option for other people who might be wanting to do the same thing. So I think that it's easier to deal with the social repercussions of just letting someone go than having to deal with the social repercussions of just letting someone die and establishing that precedent, because that's many more irreversible outcomes that we can't fix.
On the question of honesty and deceit, do you think that this man is being honest to the tribunal when he says, I want to die by those gallows, or was he playing with the law?
Honestly, it could be both, that he's playing with the law, saying that I want to die with the gallows. It could immediately be an assumption like, why would you want to die? That's obviously a lie. However, I honestly thought that he was being honest.
Is there any wiggle room that the opposite could exist here? That he is being deceitful to the tribunal?
Yeah, I took it as like if that was the case, I took it as like reverse psychology, like I'm going to die on those gallows. And then the tribunal is enticed to let him go because it's a unique situation. Like I said, I thought that it had a greater consequence to put him to death. So if the tribunals felt the same way and they were unsure of how to act, then yes, it's honestly a smart way to bypass the requirements of the law.
Let's get into another concept, this idea of proportionality. The wordage is this: let the punishment fit the crime. Do you think that this law, as written by this man who owns these things, the bridge, the land, the water, creates this law, and the consequence of lying is death, is that proportionate, do you think, dying for telling a lie?
I think it's a little excessive to have the gallows or the death be the result of a lie. I think it would actually do the law better if they had changed that outcome, because then I think this case, like the decision would be much easier. Because I think since the stakes are so high, it makes decisions where unique circumstances arise, then it makes it really difficult to make the right decision or the just decision. So I think it's unproportional.
So what's an example for our listeners in terms of this idea of proportionality?
If you're driving while intoxicated, then you're probably going to be in jail for a few days, or you're going to have to pay a fine. I think that is acceptable because it's not a great expense to the other individual.
Let's just say hypothetically, here in Texas, they came up with driving while intoxicated, operating a motor vehicle. Please stop that individual. They do all these battery of tests, and the tests result in his failing this sobriety test and so on. Do you think it would be proportional if when he or she pleads guilty or is found guilty, that that person be sentenced for life in prison? Would that be proportional or disproportional to you?
If they were just driving under the influence, then I think it's disproportional. I think there's a lot of factors that go into that decision, because it also depends how much they were intoxicated, the way they were driving, how impaired they were. So I think that a life in prison might be a little bit, it's easily corrected. I think it's something that can be easily corrected based on example, and giving life to a mistake that may be not as proportional to giving life in prison. It won't even give them the chance to correct the issue. It will just kind of shun them away from society.
If a person kidnaps a child, strangles a child, attempts to burn the little body of the child dies, the person who committed the crime is identified, has his days in court. Is it proportional in that case if the state of Texas were to say in that particular case, that person, if found guilty or when found guilty, he or she is looking at life imprisonment or death penalty? Is that proportionate?
I think it would be in that case, because for one, it's a vulnerable member of society, likely that needs care from other people. It's a part of a family, a part of a community, a school. They're often connected to people in society that probably care for that person. And it just so happens, like, the crime is just so, it's kind of heinous. There's multiple steps throughout that crime where there's an opportunity to decide this is wrong. The act that they're doing is simply not right, and they continue to do so anyways and continue to make it worse. So I think in that case, a severe punishment like that is important, because not only are they a danger, they're showing to be a danger to other people, mm-hmm. but they also show that they don't have that ability to stop themselves when something is clearly wrong.
Is that an example of this idea called an eye for an eye?
Yeah, I think so. I feel like even in some cases, some people might argue that they still might not feel like it's even because they likely feel close to their child. They not only lost an individual, they lost experiences with that person, their ability to see them grow up, seeing them graduate high school. There's other opportunities, but I think it's a great example.
There are five types of punishments. So there's this idea of retribution, the concept of revenge, the idea of an eye for an eye. Another form of punishment that a judge or a jury can impose is called rehabilitation. A person is found guilty of a crime may be placed on probation as a result of that, because maybe they think that that person can be rehabilitated. There's restorative justice or restitution. There is incapacitation. In other words, the person is sent to jail, is sent to prison, and so he or she can no longer commit crimes in society because he or she has been incapacitated to do that in society. And then lastly, deterrence, that judges can punish individuals, specifically sentence them to prison, and so that person has been specifically deterred from committing crimes. Those who live in the community realize, okay, so his behavior caused him to go to jail. Maybe I should consider not doing that kind of behavior because I know the consequence, so I would be deterred generally. Mm-hmm. Speaking of punishment, the scenario is, again, tell the truth, you cross. Tell a lie, you die by the gallows. Are there any alternatives? Did you consider maybe any alternatives as to what in this scenario, in this moral dilemma, could have been considered here? Other alternatives?
Well, I think for one, they could just simply deny entry until they tell the truth. Like, you cannot come in until you say the truth. I think that's the most simple one. But then maybe they could do so in the form of a fine. Monetary, you have to give up something that you have, maybe like a temporary holding for a day, and then just to pay your dues. But I think even all of those options might be a little bit better than, or a lot better than having to sentence them to death.
Because that seems a little extreme,
yes.
Right? Okay. But other alternatives to judges is, like you just mentioned, they can impose a fine instead of sentencing the guy to the gallows. Just fine the individual. If that existed back in the time, probation. Somebody to supervise mm-hmm. this person who didn't tell the truth and is allowed to cross a bridge, saved himself from the gallows because we're finding alternatives, maybe place them on probation, some sort of supervision. We have today community service, so maybe this person is court-ordered by this tribunal. Okay, we want you to, you know, clean all the buildings, all the public buildings in our village. So they seek punishment that way. So alternatives could apply in this case, you think? If you were the judge?
I think it should be low stakes. It's not anything insane. It's something with like heavy weighted value. They're not asking for your life history if you've been involved in crimes. They're simply asking to declare where you're going and what you have. So I think it should be a low stake punishment.
Do you think that sometimes judges are posed with cases somewhat like this, difficult cases? It's a young child. It's an elderly person who commits a crime, for example, and no injury to a person, but commits a crime. And you're there, you're the judge, you see that elderly person in front of you. He's 75, he's 80 years of age. He committed a crime for which he is accountable, right? Because no one is above the law, no one is below the law. Do you think that as a judge, you can also be merciful?
I think so. It kind of reminds me of like mitigating factors and aggravating factors that come with criminal cases. Like, if they're mitigating factors, like maybe they're a good member of society, they work a full-time job, they have a family, they do community service, things like that, that you typically make you more inclined to give them a lesser punishment. So I think it's important to have mercy towards certain situations.
So what are some aggravating factors or circumstances?
Situations or aspects of a certain case that may make the situation worse. So if a person is stopped for driving under the influence, then an aggravating factor might be, oh, he also had drugs in the car, or he had a child in the back seat. So just things that may make the situation much worse and make it harder for you to empathize with.
A person who has a long criminal history, that could be an example of an aggravating factor versus someone who is before the judge who has never, ever committed a crime until this one time, mm-hmm. and he's in front of the judge. That could be a mitigating factor for him, meaning very little or no criminal history. When you began the analysis of this at home, did you look at it from a legal and moral perspective and kind of just drew some thoughts behind them, mm-hmm. below each of those? What was your final decision when you looked at both the legal issues, moral issues? What's the right thing to do? What did you decide?
I decided to let the man go freely and just waive the gallows punishment, just because I guess initially led my immediate answer was based on my morals, my morality. I just didn't feel right putting the man to death after his statement. I didn't feel like the statement itself applied to the law. So I felt that executing the intended outcome of the law was just, it didn't fit the situation. The punishment was extreme. It was way too extreme and costly.
Was this quote unquote case study or scenario, does that constitute for you a moral dilemma?
Definitely. Even with the peers that I've shared this with, I receive different responses. And a lot of people disagree.
Share with us what those responses are when you queried them.
Some people were on board with the gallows. They thought that if he went knowing what the law was and chose to not abide by the law, knowing the outcome, then he knew what outcome he signed up for. So that they think that the gallows, the hanging is justified. But I tended to think that flexibility is more important.
And in real life, we do have judges who sometimes do interpret the law very strictly. There's nothing wrong with that. But then there are other judges who say, okay, well, I think the intent of the founders of the Constitution, it was written very ambiguously to allow for interpretation for succeeding generations. So we let the man go. Okay, so he told a falsehood, but he's alive. Versus, I'm going to hang the guy because that's what he wants to do. But you know what? He was telling the truth and we hung the guy. Mm-hmm. That's greater consequence because that person is no longer on this planet.